Willkommen zu einer neuen Ausgabe des Nerds Podcast. Hier sprechen wir über Methoden, Trends und Strategien, wie ihr euer Business über Social Marketing verbessern könnt. Von Facebook bis LinkedIn, von E-Com über Lead-Generierung bis Brandbuilding, von B2C bis B2B. Heute für euch am Mikro, Alexander Böker.
So, welcome everybody to the Nerds Podcast. As you might have noticed by now, this is an English edition. So if you say, well, this seems to be really complicated, we will just translate it. But if you want to have the original experience, then you should keep listening here. Because the topic of today will be so interesting. Because we have a great guest and the topic is, how do we avoid to be boring on LinkedIn? So, and with me is Myra Ahmed. Hello, Myra.
Hi, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So, although this might be, well, everybody else's mistake, but there might be some people who don't know you yet. So, and asking, why are we two talking about this topic? So that's, we should explain, or better, you should explain, Myra, what are you doing for a living?
Yeah, so I'm a freelance copywriter. I've been working in B2B SaaS for around 5 years now. And for years, I was doing website copy, emails, like pretty much any kind of copy. But in the past year or so, I've specialized in ads, specifically LinkedIn ads. So mainly I write the ad copy and then I write a landing page for clients. And yeah, I don't think I've ever met anyone else who's like specifically a LinkedIn ad copywriter for a living.
So, and Myra, you're pushing out a lot of content on LinkedIn, actually, about your work. This is actually where I found you. And so you all should have a look at Myra's profile and at the content she's pushing out because it's outstanding. And it's really some of the best work in copywriting I've seen in the last couple of years. So that's why we're talking today.
Thank you so much. Yeah, I tend to make it very actionable. So hopefully if people read my post, there's something that they can take away and apply.
Okay, before we are talking about how to make the perfect copy or how to write a good ad, let's talk about the mistakes. So, and the most common mistakes that you see, because I know that you're, well, usually step in with companies that already had some experience or had some ads and obviously weren't satisfied with the results. Mm-hmm. So that's when you step in. So, and if you look at the, well, whole of LinkedIn advertising, so what are the most common mistakes that you see?
Yeah, so by far the biggest number one mistake is that they're simply too boring. There's nothing eye-catching about it, nothing compelling. And the reason that it's often boring is because it's just one big sales pitch. It's all about me, the company. It's not so much about this person who's actually reading it. And it's phrased in a very corporate way. It's very formal, very serious. And so what I often like to remind people is if you're running LinkedIn ads, just remember that the platform that you're using, people are not there to be sold to. We're generally on LinkedIn for two things. We either want to be entertained or we want to learn something. And so we actually need to be matching that vibe with our ads. We need to be providing that entertainment or we need to be providing that educational element, like help people actually learn something that they can apply, rather than our ads just being some sales pitch that's going to instantly get ignored by being scrolled past. So yeah, number one biggest mistake is definitely that it's just too boring. It's too sales pitchy.
Yeah. And if we think why it might be that way, just one possible explanation might be there a lot of people who are actually doing LinkedIn advertising have learned on with Google Ads. So from my experience, so so there's this expectation that there's already an intent, but we're in push marketing, so we are just throwing our messages in the way of the user who's not.
They're not in the market. They're not looking for the product. Yeah.
Not at all. So, and it's, well, basically it's just the one big mistake, whether it's in B2C or B2B, just thinking that we, so as the advertiser, are the hero of the story, right? So.
Yeah. And to be fair, like, I've written ads like this. I've made the same mistake. So I'm not pointing fingers at anybody and saying I'm better. I've just learned that when I write sales pitchy ads thinking like, oh yeah, ICP will, you know, immediately want to book a demo or whatever it is, like, it's just not going to happen for 99% of people reading it.
Yeah.
And so you've made a really important distinction between when people have the intent to buy, i.e. when they search your term, when they search your category, they're looking at your website, they're looking on G2, whatever it is, versus when they're on LinkedIn and they're just passively consuming content, they're not looking to buy a product. So we're often... That's why I think brand awareness is such a big piece of what you do on LinkedIn, and not just expecting immediate results, like immediate demo bookings. You might get that, but the majority of it will just be people passively finding out about you. So from there, what do? You hope to just keep popping up in their feed with your brand name and with whoever works at your company, and you keep popping up. And every time they see you, they associate you with whatever it is, like, oh, they always post fun things, or they always post such interesting things. Like, you're praising me because I've probably popped up on your feed for maybe a good few months now.
Yeah.
Once upon a time, you had no idea who this Myra Ahmed person was, but like now you just see me popping up. And it's like a bit of a long game, and you just need to keep showing up with value, I think.
Yeah. And as you just said, so well, especially if you're targeting cold audiences who have had no contact, and you have there's no indication that they have any intent. So it might be different if you're having a very clear retargeting strategy, so you know that people were probably on your pricing and product page, and so you can say, well, these are pretty hot already in the process. But if it's for a cold audience, then just assume they have you're just in the noise of the feed. And they're just scrolling like crazy through that feed, and there's no intent. So, and just standing out of that. And this is something from my experience, is people design these ads, and obviously the first mistake they make is it's about us as the brand, and with the tonality of the brand. So don't harm anyone. Don't be, well, be serious. It's B2B. Be serious. And then they work on the copy and they make the visual and look at it as if it was just like a single experience, but it's just in that feed, in all that noise that is up there. And so standing out in that competition, well, there's more needed.
Yeah, you know, I always say, like, remember that you're not a priority to your target client. So, like, let's say I'm trying to sell you some proposal software, you know, you work for an agency, and I'm trying to convince you, Alexander, like, the way that you currently do your proposals, whatever software you might use, whether you're using Google Docs, whatever, it's not good enough. And you're like, I have like a million other things to think about. Maybe you're thinking about your clients, how you can do a better job on the projects. Maybe you're thinking about client acquisition. You're thinking about other employees at your company and how to, like, increase retention, like, whatever it is. Bringing in more money into the company, like, and I'm here just talking about this proposals. This is one little blip in the entire kind of periphery of what you care about. Yeah. And we're just fighting for that attention with our one little product for something that's not really a huge priority. That's why I think that's the biggest challenge. Like, how can you overcome just a lack of interest? Like, oh, I don't really care that much. I think our current software is good enough. That's why I think another big mistake I would say is like lack of differentiation. So you really need to carve out what is your unique position in the market. What unique features do you have? What is your strong point of view? And then go to market with that, rather than just assuming, saying that I have a software is good enough. When you know that your target client is already using a similar software that they maybe think is already good enough, like, it's doing the job, this proposal software is doing the job for me. How are you going to convince them that that is not good enough, that actually they need what you have?
Exactly. That's the second thing I would mention as well. So usually they have a solution, and the way they have the solution, whether it's a good or bad solution, it's the normal solution, because that is basically their life. So for most, well, we're both dealing with a lot of software companies. So usually for a lot of these cases, the solution that most of their potential clients have is something like Excel. So probably not the best solution, right? So in a lot of cases. So, but still, it's just established. It's normal. And you can't imagine it to be somehow different, right? So at least not because I say, well, I have a better solution. Well, gone. So that's the point of differentiation. How do you carve it out, that point? And from my point of view, it's one big mistake is, and that's really going the direction of how to make it better, is a lack of understanding of the day-to-day life of our target group. So if we don't understand that their daily problem that they struggle with, to make a connection with this, so it usually is in the end for a lot of ads, well, less money, more time for you. So on a very high level, which is basically for 99% of all proposals. So this is not specific. This is
yes. Exactly. I'm so sick of seeing like save time, save money. I mean, I get why people are saying that. Yeah. But like you said, like anybody can say that claim. And what I love when I'm working with clients is like, what is a claim that we can say that nobody else can say? You know, what's unique to our product? What's going to stand out? And really what I found through numerous ads and testing is that when the messaging becomes more specific and more unique, it does tend to lead to better results in terms of clicks and leads and all of that. So I really encourage a lot of people, like, start to get away from the broad kind of high level messaging and start to get more and more specific. Like, for example, before this conversation, I was looking at, okay, what are the ads that are in my feed? Like, maybe I can talk a little bit about what I'm currently seeing. So I've got like these screenshotted examples, and there are two of them from LinkedIn trying to advertise to me, LinkedIn. And the first one said, open more doors, close more deals, start free trial. What? Yeah. I don't know. What does LinkedIn mean by that? Like, I have no idea what they're trying to promise to me. Yeah. What exactly is a specific thing that I can do to open more doors and close more deals? So that was like one of those, you know, those spotlight ads that come up in the corner. But then it changed to another one, and I thought this was better. So this one says, learn to measure and improve LinkedIn ads ROI. And it says, watch webinar now. And I like that, it's still a little bit fluffy, but it sounds more specific to me about like, learn to measure and improve LinkedIn ads. Like, oh, cool. Like I can picture myself doing something like this. It sounds relevant to my workflow, to my tasks, because I am in LinkedIn ads. So can you see that contrast between like how something can sound very fluffy and generalistic, like close more deals? So many ads just have this very fluffy benefit kind of messaging versus when you focus on what can they specifically do with your product, with your solution.
I think for a long time, and guilty on that as well. So we're talking, please don't just communicate features, communicate benefits. And then what's it behind it? And in the end, it might be that save money, save time, right? So if you're going all the way through, unfortunately, you lose completely connection to how you do this. Yeah. So in the end, it's a lot of marketers, I think, went that way and say, well, this is the final experience of benefits that we want to communicate. After all, big picture, too big, actually. So if you're on that, so it's more about, as you said, about capabilities. It's not really exactly the features, the capabilities of the service or product that you have.
Yeah. And this now leads to the next mistake, which is that a lot of B2B SaaS teams are just too afraid to niche down to a specific ICP. They want to have broad targeting, like all kinds of companies, C-suite, anybody. Like they often don't niche to a specific department at a specific type of company.
Yes.
So like if we go back to that example from LinkedIn trying to advertise to me, where they said open more doors, close more deals, and then it says like in little copy, save time by finding the right leads to win larger deals. Now, imagine if LinkedIn, instead of doing that, they decided to niche their messaging to, like, let's say service providers like myself and you, like marketing agencies, and they could instead like focus that copy on getting more marketing clients by doing X, Y, and Z. And then they could, again, niche down to SaaS, like a lot of SaaS people use LinkedIn. And then they could talk about trying to find the right leads for your SaaS product. Like, just the more that they niche down and like actually segment their audience and then create copy accordingly, the better that that messaging will land. But they've not done that. Instead, they're just talking about save time, find the right leads, yeah, close larger deals. Like, it's not super, super relevant to me. And so as much as they think that that's making it better for them, they've got a larger target audience, so that means that there'll be more money coming in. Actually, it's the opposite that happens, because now your messaging will not resonate with people as deeper.
Exactly. This is really just, we just need to understand that the default of people is not reacting, not acknowledging, just scrolling. So this is just default, right? Because, well, just to save brain power, energy here. So it's exactly like that. So our brain is conditioned not to waste energy. So if it doesn't appear to be relevant to me, and then what you just said, so how to produce or how to generate relevancy, and that might be, and that's, you need to understand how is the target group defining themselves, or, right, as you said, yeah. So you're a service provider. So if you say it, or if you say, well, they just, well, they define themselves as, I don't know, finance experts in SaaS. That would be very specific.
Very.
Right? If they define themselves that way, that would be a good approach, because that seems to be relevant. This is for me, right?
Yes. And then you can come up with so many angles in your copy that a finance person would care about, like dealing with tax season every January, or like mismatched invoices, or whatever it is that these pain points are, versus just save time and save money and all of this stuff that just doesn't, I can't picture myself doing that. It doesn't sound as specific. Segmenting your ICP. That's why I think positioning work needs to be done before you even create the ad or any kind of copywriting asset, marketing asset. You need to just decide who is your audience and what are they currently doing? So what is your big competitor? What's a big competitive alternative? So are they using another software tool? Are they using one of your direct competitors? Okay, cool. What are the biggest pain points of that? And how do you solve that? And that's what you go to market with. Or are they using like a manual process? They're doing it themselves, like you said, using Excel. They might be using some paperwork, something like that. What are the pain points of that? And then go to market with that message about how you're better than that process. So really what we're saying, you and I, is like having that deep understanding of who your ICP is. Yeah. But first you actually need to decide who is your ICP, and are you willing to niche down and resonate deeper with people versus just going broad?
And then just to make this, well, it's not really about copywriting, about media buying, but what you can do actually, so if we just imagine a case, so you're billing e-commerce software, so might be something like Shopify or whatever is your competitor, so and so you want to be sure about this, and there are solutions you can, well, to build these audiences so that you are really, you're targeting exactly that audience, so it makes sense to well, perhaps even mention your competitor. So if you use like a little tool like BuildWith or something, you can see, okay, you can just download the websites that use Shopify. So with our great solutions, we can say, well, and then you probably know about the advantages, disadvantages, and the differences that you make to Shopify. So you really make a very specific messaging on that, because you know this audience is really just exactly in that situation. And there is the connection with the strategic media buying and what you're doing with the ads.
Yeah, that reminds me. So like I have a client where their ICP is currently using legacy systems. So this is like a telecoms client, and they managed to get a list of all the, not all the customers, but a lot of customers using a specific legacy tool. And they've had it for like 20, 30 years in this company, these customers. So we ran ads to this audience, so the competitors' customers, and we ran ads to just like general, like LinkedIn targeting, but with job titles. And by far the better ads were the ones when it was the competitors' customers, that specific list that we had, because we knew that this is the solution that they're using. The pain points will resonate with them. It's going to get their attention. So yeah, if you can like specifically target that audience that you know are using that specific solution, like you said, and make sure your messaging is focused on what they're currently going through, it just it really does grab their attention.
Yeah. So you as a B2B copywriter should be like a mentalist on that. So just, okay, and you will tell people something that is completely irrelevant to them by assuming things, right?
Yeah. You know, like a phrase that we often use in copywriting is like, you're matching the conversation that's happening in their heads already.
Exactly. Well, the impact that I would like to have with any ad is something like, where, especially if it's like a value proposition, pain point, communication, that is like this inner nodding so that they make like this, right? So this is my life. So like that. Yeah. So standing just alone in front of the smartphone or your screen saying, yeah, that's me. That would be perfect.
Those are my favorite posts on LinkedIn when it's relatable, but I love it especially when it's done in like a funny way or just in an engaging way or the person sounds very honest. So I think to go into like, okay, we've spoken about the mistakes, but what can people do? Like, what are the solutions?
What do you need to, so how to start? So before we just make the perfect solution, I want people to be here longer on this podcast than just 20 minutes. So we need to explain.
No, that's cool.
We need to explain how to start, because usually you need probably some research, I would assume. So what do you do? If I knock on your door and let's say I'm a software company, let's say, well, I know some of your clients, but this is not an advertising show. So there's a software company knocking on your door and saying, well, please, Mara, we did all these campaigns. It's not working. Save our lives.
Yeah, I'd be like, don't worry, I got you. Okay, so research. Okay, so one of the things that I do is go through the previous ads that they've published and make notes. I basically thematize them, like, okay, I can see the ones that performed badly fall into this kind of category. So like commonly, it might be there's just too much going on the image, it's too busy, the messaging was too vague, too generic. And then equally, I look at, okay, what are the ones that performed the best and why was that? Now, I don't know about you, Alexander, if you see this, but I often see that the best ads are like meme ads when I go into Campaign Manager and I go into like click-through rates and toggle to the...
Depending on the metric that you're looking at.
But yeah.
We haven't talked about humor.
We'll come on to that. Generally, I see memes and thought leadership ads are the ones that perform the best. And incidentally, these are two ads that don't look like ads. So that's a big... part of my philosophy. I do a LinkedIn ad audit and then we look at what's worked well, what hasn't, and then what are the learnings from there. But the biggest thing that I do for research that really makes the most difference is customer research. So I ask my client, like we said, I usually work with software ones. So I say, can you go into your Gong or whatever you're using and can you just share some of your customer calls with me? So I want to see your sales calls, whether they're closed won, closed lost, doesn't matter. I'm just analyzing, what solution is that prospect currently using? What are they saying is kind of triggering them to look for a new one, a new solution? And during this call, which is usually like a demo call, like what's getting them really excited about, oh my gosh, you guys do that, or I love that feature. So I'm looking at pain points and I'm looking at what features they're excited by. And I make notes of this. So I'm constantly going through the transcript and copying and pasting phrases into another document and be like, wow, I really like that phrase that they used. That was great. Like a recent example was in the previous tool, this took us 3 hours, but in this new one, it looks like it would only take like a minute, something like that. And so I'm copying and pasting these phrases and that helps me understand what's going on for this prospect, what they're currently going through so that I can use that messaging in the ads. And I'll often use it like almost verbatim, like almost word for word in the ads. Customer calls are really, really important. And the final piece of what I do before writing copy is just clarifying the positioning with the client, because like I said in this conversation, I really encourage people to get very specific about the ICP that they want to focus on and also about the use case. So use case is just a fancy word for like the activity, the workflow activity that the product allows that person to do. And I often work with software products that allow you to do like 10 billion different activities, especially with AI now. Like, you know, there's just so many broad use cases, which sounds great, but it doesn't work well for ads or it doesn't work well for messaging because I don't know, like what, like I said with that LinkedIn example before about closing, opening more doors and stuff. I don't know what the workflow task is that they're talking about when they say open more doors. So I get my client to make that decision about what's a specific use case that we can go to market with. What do your customers come to you for? What's the biggest capability that they want from you? So like, for example, I have a client who's like a payouts tool, but they can also help you with tax compliance. They can also help with onboarding. But I said to them, hold on, like, I love that your product can do so many things, but it's just going to make the messaging very jumbled. So let's just talk about the payouts capabilities. And then they can read about the other parts of it on the landing page. So it's just about finding that focus. But it's really important when you're working with a team that they're all on the same page with you, because later down the line, when they're looking at the copy, then they're going to tear it to shreds. Like, why are we talking about this? Or why did you not mention this? So I think to begin any ads project, you need to make sure we're all on the same team about what the strategy is going to be in terms of positioning.
Yeah, it is. Yep. And isn't it funny that I'm pretty sure you have the same experience. So, well, we share this idea. It's mostly important to talk to sales and customer support or customer service,
success,
because they have the direct relation. And if you're doing I think we're working pretty similar here. We're using AI now if you get a lot of data and transcripts of these so that you can really cluster the information. But it's funny from my point of view that there were always topics, specific capabilities, features, whatever they a lot of people talk about, but it seems nobody really ever had a look at it to see, okay, it's always this entry point, because we're talking about an entry point to the product to make it tangible.
Yes.
Right? So to make this relation really work and not really giving the big picture, changing your whole experience of whatever. So, and clients, so salespeople usually have a good feeling about what to offer in a call. And a lot of the stuff that we do is actually use communication that is done there, because the questions are raised anyway, and obviously in the sales process. And it's just making them earlier. So in the process.
Yeah, I love that you said that. Yeah, it's so true. It's about the trigger, the buying trigger, or as you said, the entry points. So often I have to tell clients, like, I know you want to talk about X, Y, and Z feature, but this, we're just talking about the entry point. Like you said, like, we're just talking about what's going to get our foot in the door for this prospect. And if I said to you, hey, Alexander, I can write copy for your emails, your landing pages, your ads, your case studies. And if I give you a whole long list, I bet all of that would go in through one ear and out the other. Versus if I just say to you, Alexander, I can write copy for ads. That's simple, it's focused, and it's memorable.
Yeah, I know there are cases where it's working that way, that you, for example, for one of the, we're replacing 5 tools or something, but even that is more tangible than we are changing your experience of your inner operations forever. Right?
Yeah. Exactly. And if you can actually specify what those 5 tools were, like, it resonates even more with the ICP. Yeah. So yeah, it's about getting away from that high level messaging and getting more specific about, okay, well, we already have customers. Why did they choose us in the first place? And, you know, I think you'd be surprised at how many SaaS teams don't actually have a clear answer to that.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. So I'm just thinking about a new client who's really offering like a very, well, a solution that helps for a lot of use cases, so which is obviously good, has high value. But in the end, it's all about breaking it down to situations. So for me, it's about a situation. What's a common situation that me, as being in the target group, best case experience every day? And in some, so whether it's an obvious pain point because I hate it, or whether it's like a latent need because I wasn't aware that this is bullshit how I manage things. So, but it needs to be something that I experience very often.
Yeah, that's a good point about latent pain points that they don't overtly think about.
Well, that is actually, in most cases, it's the case. So you have like a subtle feeling that it's all, so that the way you work is not ideal. But as you're doing it all the time, it's normal. So, and if it's normal, then if you're not looking for a different solution, then you're probably not aware. For a lot of SaaS companies, that's true from my point of view, because they never thought about changing the system anyway. So it's for everything that's coming new. We had something like a B2B payment solution, whatever. So on there, and we were talking a lot about the direct competitors who are coming out there because fintech and so on. But in most cases, the direct competition is the credit card of your local bank, which is a very bad solution compared, but you never thought about that there are other solutions out there. So that work differently and would make it very easy. So you're still dealing with, who has the number of the credit card? Okay, oh no, this is overbooked. Oh no, I can't do it. And controlling then, what's this for? And so on. So
yeah, it's true. So like the way that I understand it is it's called the stages of awareness. So yeah. The ICB starts off being unaware, then they become pain point aware, and then they learn about the solutions, and then they learn about your solution. And that's why I think so much of demand gen, demand creation, whatever you want to call it, is just constantly going to the market with that strong point of view. Like, there are these pain points happening, our solution can help fix that, and just keep on hammering your message until finally it goes through. But I think something interesting now is like when prospects do become aware finally that the pain point is annoying enough that they want to fix it, I feel like what's becoming more and more of a trend is basically just going to ChatGPT and asking, hey, like, what's a solution for this?
Yeah. I know. Unfortunately, this is a good example for how this journey becomes invisible for us. So if you're hammering out your messages out there, and then your client will say, no impact in our company. So we don't see any conversions on that, because obviously you made an impact. People went for example to ChatGPT, informed themselves, made this detour, came around, and there's no clue that you were ever involved.
This is going into the attribution topic. I know, very, very complex. But yeah, you're not going to get recommended by ChatGPT until you fix your value proposition. So
So let's you said right in the beginning, so trying to be actionable. So now is the point where we talk about what do you actually do then? So you've done the research. So you have a lot of data here. Yeah. So and now your client is standing right behind you and say, let's do your magic.
Yeah. Okay, so just to quickly recap in terms of what we said. So we've spoken about doing the positioning strategy, so deciding who your target audience is. We've spoken about looking at customer calls, talking to sales, talking to customer support teams. And we mentioned just kind of looking through your campaign manager, what's worked well, what hasn't worked well. Okay, so now that you have all that data, basically I just like to come up with potential angles from there. So let's say we learned that big entry point was for this new payouts tool that it's got better currency conversion. So we're learning that a lot of customers are coming to our payouts tool. They like that the FX rates are better. Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So now we have that based on data. Let's start creating the messaging from there. And there are all kinds of different ways that I like to go about this. But more and more, I'm leaning towards storytelling in the ads. So let's take the pain points that we learned from the sales calls and let's kind of use that in the hook of the story that we use in the ads. So I really favor ads that have a lot of words, long copy. Most SaaS companies don't go for that. Most LinkedIn ad marketers always talk about keeping it concise, keep your copy short.
LinkedIn would recommend to keep it short.
Yeah. They always say, like, keep it to 150 characters if you don't want it to get truncated and all these things.
And now we have 3,000 characters.
Now it's more. So now finally they've given more character count, which I'm very excited about. And use that space, I would say. So what's the reason that everybody has a negative view of long ad copy is because when people have attempted it, it's been quite boring and most people haven't read it. So most times that people use long ad copy, it just hasn't worked well. But when you write about something relatable to your prospect, like we keep saying in this conversation about that specific situation that they're going through right now, and you make the emotional tension of that story feel real about that decision that they're going through, about that pain point and how it shows up, and maybe now they're worrying about their job security, or they feel like they're undermined at work and why am I not getting that promotion? When you start bringing out that tension that's really going on inside but nobody's talking about, but they feel it, they're going to read that long copy because it's relatable. They don't care that it's long word count. So yeah, a lot of people on the internet don't read a lot of text, but when it's relatable and when it's interesting and there's that emotional element that they can relate to, they're going to read it until the end in most cases.
Yeah, unfortunately, therefore, you would need a good copywriter. This is the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you go, well, there are two elements actually. So this is, so for the copy, you would go probably trying to get a very strong punchy hook there so yes. that people, so that you get over the first two lines of text.
Yeah.
And you know, with every line that you, that they read, the probability that they stay on the text will be higher. So yeah. This is basically, so my well, I once was a journalist, so not really. So they're just for a pretty long time. So
you know all about creating that hook and keeping people hooked.
But at least I should. So, but I know, so the main purpose of the first sentence is just to get people to the second one.
Yes.
So, and if they keep on reading from there, then they will, at a certain point, of course, it could be too long, but as soon as you don't get really boring, so the most critical part is just the first sentence, actually, probably the first five words in that sentence, and then to have it like with the second one, again, to raise another question there or to raise an emotion there, and then from there on, as you said, it should be a good story that yeah. you tell, otherwise they will just drop off.
Yeah, and you know, like you said earlier, Alexander, about the person should be nodding, or at least internally nodding as they keep reading it. So just quickly before I continue, people listening to this might be thinking, okay, but you're talking about the copy, what would you use for the visual?
Exactly.
Because the standard format for LinkedIn ads, usually we think about the single image ad, and kind of like the standard look of it is there's a big headline, and then there might be a subhead, smaller text, and then there might be an image. So I first got into ads thinking, oh, that's what I should be doing. Like everybody does that, every SaaS company, the big headline and all of that. But actually more and more, I'm leaning away from that. So you can still do it, it's fine. But what I just didn't see like amazing results from doing that kind of style. Like we would get less than 1% click-through rate for the most part when it came to those ads, which makes sense because it's kind of like a very salesy post. It looks like an ad. Like it clearly looks like an ad. It doesn't look like a native post. So now what I do with the ads is it might be like a selfie, like a selfie of the founder or of a customer. And what the advantage of that is that it looks like a native post. Like, you know, a lot of people post their selfies on LinkedIn accompanied with a story. Or it doesn't really matter what the visual is, but it looks better if it doesn't look like an ad. So yeah, generally I just go for photos of people and then I let the copy, the intro text, do most of the work for the ad. So it's very different to what most people do. Yeah.
Actually, yes. And I know that there are different other ads from you, I think, or from the past probably, where you work with, well, not always classical visual, but somehow with a more, well, sometimes with more humor on it, mm-hmm. or whether this is explicit content from like this Instagram visual or something that appears to be, well, actually, it's the worst thing that you can do actually is just using stock footage from my point of view, which is obviously stock footage, right? For me, well, I can feel it from 10 meters away. Then you have like this, as you said, it's a broad messaging with a big headline, not specific. I pretty much still like if you have text on it. I get your point, but it's pretty good to, from my point of view, to address the audience so that even when you're scrolling through, knowing, okay, this is for me. So I pretty much like addressing the audience there. And probably, or have like just one keyword. Actually, nobody reads all of this. It's just about, okay, relevance. It could be, it's my job title. It could be my industry. It could be it could be even something very complicated like, Tara, which is a threat and risk assessment. Only people who are in that business know it. So it's like not including messaging, more like excluding everybody. Right? I pretty much like that. So, and if you have that big on the visual, it's from my point of view, it still works.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah. And that's a good point. Like, you can still use that traditional format, shall we call it. And I encourage people to just test different things, like test storytelling, what I'm saying with like selfies and like this very different approach. But also, test static image ads and just see what works for you. But you're right about if you're going to have that headline on there, just make sure it's very relevant to that person. But for me these days, I'm trying to create more ads that just don't look like ads. Because I don't know about you, but often when I'm scrolling through social, like let's say YouTube, I don't have YouTube Premium, so I get ads when I'm scrolling on my phone. And I'm waiting for that skip button to appear. Like, you know how after 5-10 seconds it finally appears on YouTube? I'm just waiting. I'm barely listening to the ad and boom, I'm just clicking onto it straight away. Or on TikTok, like I use that. And sometimes I can see at the bottom, it says like commission paid, or there's a little label that tells you that this is an ad. And as soon as I see that, I skip. So I think we often have this habit ingrained in us when we're on social media. It's like, scroll, scroll, scroll. Oh, that's an ad. Skip, skip, skip. So as soon as it looks and smells like an ad, we just don't have the time for it. However, I think there are exceptions. Like when a YouTube ad has come on with a really great hook, I have like, oh, okay, what's going on here? Like, what are they saying?
Really, from my point of view, it's well, you and me are probably pretty critical, and we're just looking at it from a different angle, actually.
Because
from the profession, from my point of view, most people just skip the ads because not just because it's an ad, because it's not relevant right from the beginning. So it really depends on, is this content in the end? It's content. So whether it's relevant or not, but I know that you're more sensitive on this if you're in that profession.
Yeah.
Right?
And I would say I'm more likely to listen or read the ad, whatever it is, if it looks like it's come from a real person. Like, have you noticed?
Since last year we have a thought leader ads, so which is becoming a bigger topic, which has one advantage from my point of view because we have a person there, or real person, with a disadvantage from an advertising point of view that you have no testing on this really, because it needs to be out there organic and you can't make like two variations on it.
Yeah. You can't optimize for conversions. You can't optimize for traffic.
Nothing like this. Yeah. But it's really, so it can work pretty well. So right now I've out there thought leader ads that have like a CPC that is more like €1 and a bit, which is pretty low from my experience, with a reach objective.
I encourage people to still run them, even if, you know, it's not the most ideal format. Like you said, like it has a face of a person attached in the corner. Yeah. You can see the name. You might not even realize it's an ad because it's so subtle. So they're great, but that's why I use the storytelling in single image ads. Yeah. Yes, there's a company name. Yes, there's no human face in the little image, but that's okay. As long as the story is really compelling. And then that way you can still optimize for traffic. You can still optimize for conversions.
Right.
Still test variations. So it's exactly what you might do in a thought lead ad with like long form, but just in a single image ad.
Yeah, you tell the same story. Advantages, you can use older objectives. Disadvantages that you can see it's from a brand and not the person in the end, so it's just a decision.
Well, it's a trade-off. Every ad format is going to be a trade-off, but and just something quickly, let's talk a little bit about ad formats, because that is a question I get asked, like, oh, which ones do you say are the best, which ones do you do? I generally only do a few different Arch formats. So like I keep saying, single image and thought leader. I don't really do carousel ads, and I don't do spotlight ads as much. And follower ads is another one. I don't really see great results. No,
never do follower ads. It's a very pricey thing for no reason, actually.
Exactly. So. I've never seen great results from those when I'm auditing accounts. So, yeah, I keep it very simple.
I pretty much like text ads.
Hmm.
Just because they're others, just, well, we're talking about frequency. You get your name out there on a high frequency for almost no money if you're putting it on CPC based. So like 150,000 impressions for €0.
Yeah.
So it's just for, it's almost for free. So that is why I would just put it in there and then let it run. So, okay, we have this appearance. So it's like free advertising, actually.
Mm.
So it doesn't have a big impact on this. It's about getting the name of the company out there on a more subconscious level.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And you don't do many document carousel ads?
No carousels. Documents I like for more or less for retargeting reasons. This is a question pretty often. We get pretty often whether you should, like, if you are working with a lead magnet, whatever it is, or liking like white paper. Well, I don't like that name because it really doesn't say anything about the intent level or whatever it is. It could be salesy. It could be like a study. It could be so many things. But if you're doing this, whether you should do it with a single image ad and then lead ad, for example, single image, or whether with a document ad, just apart from that there's engagement retargeting better for documents, it's if you put it to the test, from my experience, you always see that if you have like a shitty lead magnet, single image ad will work better. So it's the proof that your content is not good enough if the single image ad works better, because then you make a good ad probably for that thing. But if you have like a document ad, they can see what they expect. So you get, because that's the biggest question that you have. Is it big? Is it long? And does it, well, hold the promise that it's given with the whatever is the title of the document.
Mm.
So, and if you can see for whether it's complete or whether it's just a few pages, you would see people will judge on the quality, and you see where you need to improve on that. So we're doing this with some clients as one part of the strategy, but mostly it's about single image ads and video ads becoming, it's a little bit more complicated. It needs a little bit more work on that, but I pretty much like it in the way, actually, as you told, so like an expert interview that appears not really just not that perspective. So talking directly in the camera, but more talking like da da da, so that you're watching. So watching an expert talk about problems in that industry, exactly like that. So, and that's what they always say. So, but this is more about the human connection that you can make. Okay.
Are you saying you've seen better results when they look away from the camera?
It is, yes.
Interesting.
Depending on the case. So it's really, if it's more, depends on what you want to achieve. But, well, from my, just from your own experience, if I talk in that direction, so directly to you, this is what it is, then I'm teaching you.
Yeah.
So if it's like a podcast situation where you're not like this, but like this, whether it would be an interview, I would say, but in most cases, it's exactly like that. Then I'm not teaching you, but you're listening to me, and I'm not an intruder in your life. I'm not trying to make you do something.
Very interesting. Yeah, it's like you're just like a peeping Tom or just like a fly on the wall listening to
if you would just watch a discussion, but just one person of that discussion. So
that's so interesting. I have noticed that, like, whenever I open up the LinkedIn app on my desktop, and then I don't have my ad blocker on, I just get constant video ads. I don't know if you've noticed this, but like LinkedIn algorithm seems to really favor video ads. Is the impression
right now
that I got?
Yeah, so there are a lot more video ads than, well, from the proportion than out there in the market, right? That's the experience. So, well, it's still, I don't know, I would assume it's like 5% max of what's out there, but you see a lot of them. So
I know. So I guess that goes to the point of like, what's my approach to LinkedIn ad copywriting is, I usually think about it, how can we get it to fall into one of two buckets? Either the entertainment aspect, so like videos are perfect for that, or memes, or education.
Yeah.
And then how can we get somebody to learn? So obviously like a lead magnet would be the perfect example. But I use the intro text to like really give that value in the intro text rather than always just teasing it and then hoping that they click it. As much as possible, I like to actually give the value in there. And also like, you know, infographics, like, you know, I do quite a lot of those graphics where you actually open it up and maybe you read it and it's got interesting educational elements. So basically, how can you help your ICP be better at their job, at the workflow task? How can you give away as much value and then use that in the image or whatever in the ad copy? But yeah, because we know that people are using LinkedIn to learn something or to be entertained, like how can you get your ad to fall into one of those two buckets?
Whoa, a lot of stuff already, and we're talking already 50 minutes here. So the most important question is, so people listened to this and said, well, Myra has a lot to say about this. So how do I get in contact with her?
Yeah. Surprise, surprise, LinkedIn.
Really?
I'm always, can you believe that I use LinkedIn? Yeah. Just type in Myra, M-Y-R-A, Ahmed, A-H-M-E-D, and connect with me, follow me, whatever you want to do. Just peruse my content and feel free to drop me a message.
Great. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge here and your experiences.
This was so fun. This is really, really great. Yeah.
Thanks so much. So, and if you're listening and saying, well, I'm a great copywriter, I have a lot of experience and I want to share my work, well, please let us know. Perhaps we have a job for you. And please let us know anyway. If you have any questions, please drop a line or ask Myra directly on LinkedIn. And if you say, well, this was an interesting experience, well, please give us whatever it is, 5 stars or whatever. We say, well, that was not really good enough, then just don't do anything or just drop us a line. And if you think,
well, let us know if you have any questions maybe about what we've said, like maybe they need more explanation, and then maybe we can do a part two.
Then we could do part two. So if you have any questions, please let us know. And if you say, well, this was really interesting, then surprise, usually you can subscribe to podcasts so you don't miss any episode. So okay, that's it for the salesy part. Thank you, Myra.
Thank you so, so much. Like, honestly, this was really, really nice to nerd out.
And everybody else, goodbye.
Bye.
Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Wenn euch der Podcast gefällt und ihr mehr wollt, abonniert uns auf iTunes oder Spotify und bewertet uns gern. Und wenn ihr Hilfe braucht, damit eure Kampagnen fliegen lernen, bucht einfach eine kostenfreie Strategiesession. Den Link findet ihr in den Shownotes.